stuff, and certainly people should start on, they should start doing research on it, because you're playing with some very complicated gene pools when you're trying to work with fish. They have three times, as I recall, as many pairs of chromosomes as a human animal does, and it takes, so you have to develop these local stocks quite slowly, and when you take a fish from here and put him over here and nothing happens, you have to understand, perhaps, the fish over in one area have adapted to a certain area, and it's going to take a long time for the progeny of your transplants to eventually get the mutations, genetic mutations that are necessary to keep the stock viable. This is long-term stuff, and it's going on. The state is carrying it on, the federal government's carrying it on, but not under state-federal management. Not under my program. Because my program is addressed to some broader problems, really, and that is solving jurisdictional problems. Helping the state, for example, when the High Seas Conservation Bill is passed, I think that probably one of the first things that we will do is get together with the state and probably have the Secretary of Commerce or Department of Natural Resources or whatever they come up with back in Washington. I don't know who I'm going to be working with. But anyway, we'll be coming up with some cooperative regulations that will help the state enforce its king crab regulations, its offshore king crab, its offshore shrimp regulations, tanner crab, so on. Perhaps trolling in the context of our problems with Canada and some of the southern states on common stocks that we're taking. And, but no, you should work on enhancement, but you can't work on it on micro. Yeah?
You mentioned the problem of our Bering Sea stocks and the overfishing and the ways the federal government could deal, or I think even the state of Alaska could deal with the problem, and in telling the Japanese, look, we've got to have the same harvest of our fish. Now, I'm not sure whether I understood. Were you indicating that the government? Well, I kind of suspect the federal government has already dealt this away for something else. I think that's the way Alaska fisheries are to a certain extent, particularly the bottom fish in the Bering Sea. But were you giving an indication that the federal government is going to deal seriously for the fish, or that we're just going to get some more data? I mean, I kind of think there's pretty conclusive data that the Japanese themselves are doing. Are we going to get serious with them?
Well, I hope you haven't already made up your mind, Dave. It sounds like you have. No, the federal government hasn't dealt these fish away. They haven't traded them for anything. The federal government, the United States, has taken the stand that there's a lot of hungry people in the world, and if we're not using protein, that we're going to let them use it. In too many instances, the evidence of over-harvesting or over-exploitation is an after-the-fact knowledge. And at the last meeting that we had with the Russians, and I believe the Japanese, somebody here might correct me on this, both countries admitted that certain of the Bering Sea stocks have been over-exploited, and we're going to have to do something about it. And they haven't been traded off. What the hell, they weren't doing us any good. The only thing that, the biggest problem with them is that the incidental catches of king crab, and hell, they've hurt us. And we haven't had concrete proof of this, and I'll tell you, quite frankly, you're an advisor to LOS. Both Roy and I have sat down at bilaterals with the Russians and the Japanese, and if you can't confront these people with some pretty concrete evidence, you're not going to make an impression on it. They're proud of their sovereignty. They're proud of their right to be on the high seas, and one thing and another, and they demand it. And you just don't say, well, you know, this is ours. And they say, well, prove it. No, it's a tough battle, believe me. And I was appearing before the Senate and House committees on the 12-mile limit bill in 1966. I was sent there by Governor Egan, I've represented us in Moscow and Tokyo as an advisor to the State Department, as well as Roy. And it's a tough proposition. You can't get their sympathy. You can't make vague statements of ownership. You've got to have the data. You've got to have the proof. You've got to show them where they're doing wrong. And it's not a trade-off, believe me. It's they almost demand, and they are accorded all of the courtesies that a common crook is accorded by our court system in this country. And you know what that is. The gentleman back here.
I think you hit on the crux of the matter when you said the state of Alaska has control of its residents in the fishery and what type of fishery that they can conduct their business in. We have been controlled by, since a territory, 30-foot boats in Bristol Bay, 50-foot boats in Southeast, and the size of our boat limits the size of our fishery. And it seems to me that that's the crux of the matter. You have 20,000 boats under 50 feet fishing in a small area. That's wiping it out.
Well, I'll let Roy answer that. I'm your friendly Fed now, and I'm not second-guessing the state. So, Roy.
I couldn't see you ask that. It sounded like Gene. Is that right? Yeah, this is one thing that we've talked about, me at a short length, with the committee I've been working with on limited entry. Hopefully one of the things that will come out of this will be the ability of the fishermen to have vessels that are adequate and can participate in more than one fishery. And I think you can see how a guy could do that, whereas now he just can't afford to do it. Now, this may be a while in the future, but I'd like to give you an example of a success. Believe it or not, it's a Bering Sea king crab.
About 4 million crabs, somewhere around 20 million pounds.
Come out of the Bering Sea. We have eclipsed the Japanese and Russians in this fishery. Almost totally. This year, we took about 22.1 million pounds. The Japanese and Russians have taken a small quota. I can't remember what their catches were, but 2 years ago, our catch was twice as great as theirs. Now, I don't know if you know who did this. We got a fleet of about 50 boats.
They are 90% non-residents.
But they did it as American fishing fleet. Now, personally, I don't think there's a damn thing wrong with that. We have eclipsed them in the Bering Sea, except what we've agreed to in the bilateral agreement this last time. They can't fish in the
Bering Sea. A 50-fathom line there and 100 fathoms, they've got a small quota that comes out of the crab grounds now.
We have that fishery. So that is one instance of a success. Maybe it was an accident, but it was due in part, maybe a large part, to these bilateral agreements. We've actually screwed them down. Yes.
Could you give us anything on how you negotiate with these people? In other words, you got them to agree to a small quota. Now, what is your negotiating position? Can anything be said on that?
Yes, I can. Maybe Bob wants to take it up. Our research in the Bering Sea as a state has been nil. The federal government has had a trawl survey program. We're trying to find out how big these populations are, both Tanner crab and King crab. I'm oversimplifying this, but this is essentially what happened. We have been monitoring the catch. We have been taking all kinds of measurements and samples. What we tried to find out is, one, how big should they be before they can be taken? Should there be a close period for everybody fishing? And how many total crabs can we take? We have the answers to these three questions. We've got it locked up. And strangely enough, I think in the Bering Sea, between the Russian data, the Japanese data, and our own data, we've got a pretty good look at that king crab population. I think we know about how much can be taken.
Now, prospecting is impossible with the length of the boat that is allowed to salmon fishermen in the state of Alaska. They're prospecting alone. I remember in 1956, I left Pointe Edgecombe, and went directly across to Kodiak. I had a load of cattle. And a day and a half out, there was a school of tuna that was with me for a half a day. Now, there's no one been able to, with a 50-foot boat, you couldn't get out and prospect such a resource. And if we're limited, and the actual money, the prime dollar that's made in Alaska is made off of salmon in this area. Now, Kodiak, it's a different situation. And they're allowed bigger boats, of course, to fish crab. They need them because they're in the open sea all the time. But they cannot fish salmon with those boats. What I was talking about is what can be done to alleviate the length so our fishermen can or are able to prospect other areas. In a 50-foot boat, you hit the sea in your troops.
Well, Gene, this very thing, the 50-foot limit boat was first invoked in 1935 by the old Bureau of Commercial Fisheries, and the 32-foot boat in Bristol Bay has had two changes in it. These are institutions that maybe are hard to overcome in our regulations. Last year, somebody mentioned it. It was immediately enacted into a statute. It's in the regulations, but they wanted to ensure, bang, it's a statute. 71 or 72, I can't remember when they did it. Didn't change anything, but ensured the Board of Fish and Game could not change that regulation. This same proposition has been brought up many times by many fishermen who do want to get out, and they know the capability of a 50-foot boat, more particularly the capability of these boxy 50-foot limits boats that are built for a particular reason. So I can't give you the answer, but I would think that this limited entry thing would tend to get rid of those legislative inefficiencies in our fleet. That's my guess. I think it would be a plus. I think then maybe we can get a start at being able to compete. Here's a little drawback. I don't know if Bob really wants me to go into this or not, but I want to. In this legislation that we're talking about, the federal people want, what we want as a state,
we can go to here, 3 mile limit. These are our regulations. They apply
to everyone fishing in this state, resident or non-resident, because they are in our territorial waters.
This contiguous zone,
where'd it go?
Over to your left.
The contiguous zone beyond 3 mile limit is actually high seas.
That hasn't changed. But we do exercise jurisdiction within 12 miles on fisheries only. I think Bob Harding touched on this yesterday. This
9 miles
is high seas yet, as far as ownership is concerned. Well, many people get this mixed up. We do not claim territorial
waters
to 12 miles, simply fisheries jurisdiction for an additional 9 miles. Right now, the federal people are involved in giving themselves the power to regulate. And this king crab school lying in all zones, it's one school, if you will, a discrete population that we're fishing. We deal with this now in the matters of shellfish by our landing law. Many of you may be familiar with it or heard of it. This says, in this zone, maybe it's 500 miles to sea. You have to catch these crabs out here, according to these regulations, if, one, you land them in the state, or two, if you even pass through state water. Now, we've been challenged on this everywhere but in court. So far, we've made it stick. And I'll give you an example. I really shouldn't do this, but protection boys have just a little bit of a problem on the south end of Kodiak, outside of 12 miles, where a guy's got a string of gear, and he's got twice too many pots, say, or he's got them there before the season opens. Can that guy legally go out there and pull his gear and take it away? Now, we hope these state federal regulations will, one, be exactly the same. And the part Bob said I want me to talk about, will the federal people agree to adopt our regulations? And I can tell you right now, in total, no, they won't. So we're going to have to look at our regulations and see which regulations are in there for what reason.
And again, I think limited entry is going to solve some of these problems. I think you all know what kind of regulations we have where, just because of the amount of gear. So our effort in this federal regulation, state regulation thing, is to get agreement on fishing regulations for these stocks, wherever they are. Now, did I make myself clear on this? Kicked around numbers, and I'm sure some of you are confused about matching funds and so forth. I can tell you in a moment just exactly what Department of Fish and Game gets for commercial fisheries management. Two federal programs. It was called 88309. It's fully funded. If we got all the dollars that Congress allowed, it would be at $400,000 each year. 25% of that is state matching. It's only funded at $304,000 now, I believe, because the Bureau of the Budget hasn't let go of the difference. This requires 25% state matching. 89304, incidentally, this was Research and Development Act of what year? 1966. These have been renewed. This is the Anadromous Fish Act. I see there was some confusion on that. This bill also dealt with anadromous fish. It dealt with salmon, so forth. They tried to get all the anadromous fish into here, and in our case, we have all but one program into the latter one. This one is on, you might say, zero matching federal grant, but this is not exactly the case technically. We match it 50% by funds we're now expending already. They will accept this in-kind matching, which is not strange to a federal program. We simply say we're doing a complementary work with our 50% matching, and the federal people essentially have accepted this. That's about right?
Yeah.
This is the amount of $388,000?
No, it adds up to $636,000. So it'll be about
332, I think. Okay, 332. And maximum funding on that is $500,000 a year. And they've never seen fit to appropriate the whole amount. Now, does this clear up the federal funding in commercial fisheries? Yes, Bill.
Is there any way an organization like this, if it so chose, could help stimulate the federal government to greater participation?
Yes, but this is not unique to Alaska, by the way. The same allocation share is to all the states, and we're one of the maximum receiving states, the maximum amount. Now, the money Bob's talking about is in number one bill, he said, is in the process of being made into legislation possibly this year. That's the High Seas Fishing Conservation Act?
Yeah. There's no money in that.
There's no funds in that. That gives them the regulation-making authority. There's another bill. That's a CARA. You do what we want to, we might give you some dough. This is the Management Act.
That isn't exactly the way I put it.
Okay, this one has something, a schedule something like this, if I remember it right. The first year, $3 million?
Three.
And this is for the United States. Second year, $3 million. Third year,
five.
Four. And nine. Fifth year,
seven.
This is not an act, it hasn't even been introduced yet, and what did you say the most logical guess would be? When
fiscal
would be
76.
Fiscal 76. So you see, we might be a little ways off from any additional federal funding that we now know as far as federal aid and that would affect commercial fisheries, and this one, by the way, is not restricted to commercial fisheries.
That's just Alaska, though, enjoy that 397.
No, that's the United States.
United States.
That's all.
This is the first one. These are the figures I saw 2 years ago, and I don't know where they are now. Nobody's seen the bill.
Well, they haven't changed. The funding level hasn't changed. Now, one of the things is, of course, that this money here is part of the state federal program now. So, what actually we're saying is by the time we get down here, the state will have established priorities for those fisheries that it wants federal participation, that it feels it's advantageous to have federal participation in, will probably channel some of this 636, or maybe it may be 900 by then. This act was just renewed with the recommendation that it be fully funded. And so we may be looking at another 100,000. But I don't know, President Nixon's new austerity program is something else.
Out of curiosity, is that new act, the $3 million and so on, restricted to anadromous or not?
No. Fisheries. Marine fisheries, whether they be recreational or commercial. This is the National Marine Fisheries Service now.
We're going to take a break here just to have a second, but I'd like to ask one other question before we take that break. Could you give us any figures on comparison between commercial fish in Alaska, and that's both federal and state funding, and Oregon and Washington, as to what our levels are by comparison to there?
No, I can't, Joe, but I could get it.
If you would, we'd sure appreciate it.
I'd like to give you one statistic that is a favorite of mine. We have about a $200 million product value of our fisheries product annually. Maybe it's a roll higher. This is the first wholesale buy of the product, $200 million. The state has allocated $3 million annually, and we're about that level now, for commercial fisheries management. And this includes, or rather, this is, as you can see, what percent is that?
One and a half percent.
And I made an arbitrary judgment that another half a million for protection activities, and that is what you're talking about compared to the product value to what kind of a budget this bunch of guys in Fish and Game get to work with. One of the largest fisheries in the world.
Thank you very much. And
do you have a question?
I was just going to suggest that if we do start in on it, might put a little time limit on it, because I know fishermen aren't used to spending too many hours in series of meetings, and it would be a shame to get a bad start on the subject by it. But getting into it will be tired. I know I'm kind of tired. And so, and there's time on me if we want to start it, but for the others, but I would like to get time limit on it.
About 8 o'clock in the morning.
Dark fresh in the morning.
We gotta get over to
this. Is the point is well taken by Dave. We have a tentative agenda set for tomorrow, and of course number one item is limited entry. Maybe it's possible that we could get up and rest our weary behinds, or if you so desire, we could, say, discuss limited entry for a half hour or so.
Would it be possible maybe to discuss limited entry in the morning and go on to something else that may be a little easier deciding?
Would it be possible? I'd kind of like to sleep on some of the... Well, of course, all of these groups here have sent their delegate, and I would think anyway that most of them have at least discussed it with their groups. I don't know how hard. And I'd like to at least get kind of a basic position idea from each one of the delegates, what their organization had in mind that way, and just throw it out, not really get in the controversy of it, just have each delegate give a kind of a position that their group has taken. And we sleep on it tonight, and then we could get into the controversy
That's a good idea. I think that's a good idea. We could air that, just let each delegate give a general description of what their member organizations feel, and maybe tomorrow morning we could come back and really air it.
Is this on all the issues, or just the limited entry?
Some of them have a sentence. I got three or four pages.
Maybe we can start over here with Dave, who's...
My name is Dave Hurst. I'm with the Kodiak Trip Trawlers. To tell the truth, I was down here already when the organization joined, and I've been down here for about 3 weeks. And
So I don't know the position. I can't really say that our organization feels this and this and this and this about anything. I feel, I know the general sentiments on some things. The limited entry, as far as the shrimpers ourselves go, is we're kind of different because we're the only shrimpers mainly. You know, at least for our area where there's a conflict. And yet, I'm just as concerned as the salmon because, well, there's two organizations in Kodiak, and I think both of them joined the other organization was concerned with the salmon. Didn't say anybody there at this time, at least, as I understand it. But, I mean, I think I feel it's important to all the fishermen in Kodiak. And my feeling on the limited entry is that this legislature is really looking for ideas, because there aren't very many fishermen up there, or fishermen legislators even, and I think what we say is coming up important. Well,
I might say something about my impressions of the meeting in Kodiak. Both of the Kodiak organizations came in, however Dave is the only voting delegate that's here from Kodiak. The United Marketing Association, however, is one of our members. And right now we have about 19 organizations that are definite. We have four or five more that we're talking with, and I think we're going to see some growth in UFA. But by way of my impression of having talked with the Kodiak people is that they are very concerned about limited entry. The people present at the meeting voted for some form of limited entry. And that's going to be, of course, our problem, is trying to determine which form. Both organizations did vote for some form of limited entry. There was very little opposition. The question being, of course, when you have limited entry, where does the trimming take place? Now, in Kodiak, the reaction was, by and large, two categories as far as the governor's bills are concerned, and that is the people who have not been paying their income tax. If you're going to let the axe fall, that might be a place to let it fall. The second category was people who are not actually fishing, but who are carrying a license to protect their grandfather rights. So that's just in terms of their reaction to the governor's bill. They did express this concern, that they wanted, the people attending the meeting wanted to see limited entry extended to cover crab and shrimp. And of course, you know, the governor's bill is written such a way that it could be extended to cover crab and shrimp. This was my reaction, and to that meeting, however, was that they were in form of favor of limited entry, not only for salmon, but also for crab and shrimp.
Next organization.
We go down your list. Put on the delegate.
Oh, yeah, I'll just call on Mike Rose from CETA.
Well, we represent guys from all walks of life. We've got part-time fishermen and all kinds of guys.
Could you stand up,
please? Sure. We see CETA representing all kinds of people. We've got part-time fishermen and full-time fishermen and halibut fishermen and everything in our organization. And as the bill was written, we got a flat no vote on the thing to start with. But we did feel we wanted some type of limited entry. And another thing that they wanted for sure was to try to get some kind of a rehabilitation program entered in at the same time. They proposed that they maybe change the commission to a five-man board with a member from each organization, a troller, a gill netter, and a seiner on that board. And they also thought that the entry fee initially should maybe be raised a little bit, maybe like a $200 fee instead of $50 for that from that. And they also wanted to put a ceiling on it. They didn't want to see it go over $500 in any one year. And that's just about all we had for that.
Give me your instructions.
Southeastern Trawlers Association.
Is mainly Juneau or another?
Sitka.
Sitka.
Well, actually, it's a whole all Southeastern. We even have out-of-state members.
Bob Bishop.
Well, Well, I'll keep it brief as I can.
Who do you represent?
Southeast Alaska Gill Netters Association, Ketchikan. Essentially, the Southeast Alaska Gill Netters Association is in favor of some form of limited entry, and we packed the governor's bill in general concept. There are things in it that we are concerned about. The membership was quite concerned about several articles in it. Most of them have been cleared in my mind. The concern has been alleviated. I might briefly go over a couple of them that are. We were, of course, concerned about the powers of the commission and being very non-specific about those powers. However, I feel that the powers of the commission are pretty strong, but I trust the governor, and the governor will be setting up the commission, the original commission. Now, their terms run for 4 years, and by the time their terms are expired and they have a chance to be replaced, most of their work will have been done, and most of the dangers of the commission will be gone. That's our stand. And also, I think that we have less danger from a commission than we have that is full-time salaried and has a salaried staff that can work in total on this one problem. We have less danger from them than we have from the legislature, where they've got something like 60 members in the House and 20 in the Senate, I believe, and they all get a crack at things. And if you're going to put in a bill that's specific in nature, they're going to pick on these specific items more than they would a general one, I believe. And they don't have time to work on it. They don't have time to consult with the groups and go from town to town and hold hearings, as the commission will have. So I think that we're better off with a commission, really, setting up our basic regulations than we are trying to have the legislature come out with a bill that is extremely basic in nature and specific in nature. Also, the other item that was of most concern mentioned down there was the fact that if this cutback in gear is fairly extensive, it's going to throw a vast number of vessels that are presently being used probably on the boat market, which is going to depress used boat prices, so to say. There are quite a few of us that are looking forward to either purchasing new boats or building new boats. And if the boat that we're fishing at the present time becomes more or less valueless due to this depressed market, it's going to create quite a hardship on them. And some of the fellows are already in the stage of building a new boat. Can't hardly back out. They don't know where to go ahead, and they can't hardly continue without the true value of their present vessel. This is a worry. I think that there's not any real way to answer it unless the state or the commission sets up some sort of a plan where they can assess vessels as they're given entry permits, assess them at a certain valuation, a present market valuation. And then when the person does want to sell that vessel and purchase a new one, give him the difference in the value of the present valuation and the decreased valuation caused by this influx of boats on the market in some form of compensation. I think those are the main points that my group wanted me to bring up, outside of some things that are not possible to bring up in this meeting, and I won't even try to. I think we'll probably be discussing the bill a little further, and there may be some other areas that I might want to make a comment on at a later time. I think that's probably enough time for tonight.
Nope.
Well, after listening to the testimony the other day and talking to the staff of the Attorney General, we'll see how we can make any decisions, definite decisions this time, to the way they put it. As of now, the bill is in committee. I asked them, and they stated that no action would be taken on this until this committee has met with every organ, every area, and given public hearings. I can see that they'd be probably in Cordova next week, within the next week or 10 days. The best we possibly could do with any decision there would be very tentative, so I don't see how we can put any definite on this limited interest bill. We knew very little about it before we came down here. Like I said before, I wouldn't have voted on anything until the membership was read, as it turns out now, until they have talked to the Attorney General staff and the whole situation.
Dave, are you already spoken?
Tom Rollman.
I represent the Fishermen's Association. We haven't really gotten any information or enough information on the bill for me to really have any say in how we feel. The main reason I was sent down here to find out what the bill was about. The only input we had is when Bill was in Anchorage and talked to us about it and what was on the paper. So I'd have to say I really don't know.
Frenchie?
You guys will think I'm believe it's agreeable. I'm still against it for one simple way because of the wording. On Halibut. And it says that there are salmon. And you know how many will still never go with salmon. Well, all those are not accepting salmon fishery will be on top of it. You hear right about what's coming from Seattle this year, which will probably be the same thing next year. We're talking about 2-3 on the boat that we're on top of us fishing. But we don't include protection for that, but also, location for habitat.
What's in your group
there? I am too. And how many people are there?
There's a whole lot of
we used to be a salmon sea, but the vessel owner must have gotten account of the agreement, so we don't have no more salmon. Okay.
Lancy?
I represent the commercial fishing vessel owner of Alaska. My group instructed me that they didn't like the bill in its present form, but I know there were more. And of course they didn't know who all was going to get shot by the hall, and if I could see that little thing, that's about to say.
Thank you, Clancy. Tony?
Randall. We received a bill, many of our members received a bill just before we sent, or just before I came up here. Everybody was pretty much in the dark. We have halibut fishermen, trollers, gill entertainers. Many of our members are fortunate. And we have a big influx. This is a bill. We also have some school teachers that have been paid for 2 years and have quite a substantial investment. So we had opinions all the way from almost except it, right down to a couple of those who thought it was un-American, for work daily. But I would recommend Bush.
Well,
they often know we got a better look.
Thanks, Doc. Jay?
I'm Joe Law. I represent the Associated Fishermen of Yakutat. I've stated that before. It scares our people to death. Especially the part, this part-time deal, because almost every fisherman in Yakutat is a part-time fisherman. You can't make $2,300 a year as an average income and be anything but a part-time fisherman. That's what we're faced with up there. And all the setbacks. Now, I have a troller, so I can make that income higher. Or had one until it sunk the other day in the morning. Nevertheless, when you're facing people who can only have an average income of $2,300, you can't expect them to be for part-time for this type of legislation or legislate them right out of business. They're concerned about the entry permit resale. There isn't that much money in Yakutat. We feel that possibly these permits could become very valuable and have sold at midwinter time or something like that by somebody that's phasing out. Possibly wouldn't be purchased by those people in the area because they wouldn't have the money, so eventually you wouldn't have any fishermen in Yakutat fishing in Yakutat rivers. This could conceivably happen over a period of time is what the people tell us. Then they also felt that it just plain stops the growth of man in free enterprise. But this United States of America was formed on the concept of free enterprise, and each man went out and worked by the sweat of his brow, and he gained what he gained by what he did. And that this was telling him that he could no longer do it, but the best place then, well, the people felt there would be to go. You can make the $2,300 fishing, but you better not do anything except get well for the rest of the year, otherwise you're going to disqualify yourself. Now this isn't going to grow up, make a stronger nation, it's going to make a bigger welfare sort of. That question also came up, what are you going to do with all these people when you eliminate them? They're going to go to halibut or something else, and they're going to override that end of it that this gentleman here spoke of. You start cutting fishermen out of one game, they're going to have to slip into the other part of it. They were worried about this. We've had people from Bristol Bay ask about fishing down in Yakutat. Well, we tell them all the fish are about that long and they're real black. Trying to keep them out, you know. We're really concerned about the power of the commission. It seems like it has too much power. One of the solutions I heard today was possibly a bigger commission and an appeals board. And I think if it gets to this point that we definitely should have an appeals board below the commission, above the commission, so that we could appeal commission decisions. And that the appeals board should be a commercial fisherman on this appeals board. That's about all I got to say. Really, like I said, it really scared him. And I don't think there's anything else with the Waller that you can remember. I'll let Waller he's the one of the alternates from up there. I'll let him fill anything else.
I'm Walter Johnson. And eventually, Yakutat Golf Co-op, which is just now forming, will be part of this board. Right now, the only thing I see about the bill is that since the fishermen are forming, as the United Fishermen, why not have the fishermen, this group sitting here, elect the commission fishermen and the fishermen that are going to be on this commission instead of being appointed by the governor? We can't, we as the fishermen, we know who we want up there. And this will be a political move by the governor to put someone who's backing him into there, whether he's a good man for the fishermen or not. So the fishermen sitting there could appoint or elect the representatives to this commission would be better for this group here.
I have a question, right? Are the two of you, or is your area generally in favor of some type of limited entry?
Yes.
Yes.
The intent is there, as far as, but the problem is not resolved with this building, the way the census of the people that I've talked to have.
Ron? Ron Porter of the Southeast Alaska Single Owners. We feel the need for limited entry, but we didn't like the governor's bill. We were opposed to specifically the commission having the power that it had, and felt the need for some emergency clauses put in there for death and sickness, injury. But we do feel the need and seek the need for some type of limited entry.
Jim?
My name is Jim Beaton. I'm a delegate of the Southeastern Gillette Federation here in Juneau.
Turn around.
Let us see you in the face.
Come back. Come back.
Also, I'd add that I am president of the Southeastern Gillette Federation. After a 4.5-hour meeting the other night with my members, it's very doubtful how much longer I'll be president. But we took a position paper on this. Now, a great bit of what has unfolded here in the past few days makes some of this position paper irrelevant, as I see it anyway. Came up from a membership voting.
Vote was overwhelming. This is 130 people, by the way, overwhelmingly in favor of some form of limited entry. And a lot of discussion, a lot of apprehension. I would like to say something a little aside from what we found out at the meeting the other night to those of you who are delegates, in this sense, that if we come to a position where we have to go back and get more information, and this seems to be kind of the consensus or what's emerging from what's being said here, that most people are kind of in the position of wanting to go back and talk to their people and let them know what's involved in this particular bill. And of course, there's going to be alternative bills offered, and we'll try to get these bills to you as soon as they become available. But you guys that are delegates are really in a position of having a bit of a burden put on you by way of trying to get the information out to your people and trying to reflect their point of view. And hopefully, I mean, so one of the necessary functions of representative form of government, which is what we have in UFA, is that you've got to be a bit more expert than anybody else. And of course, that's one thing we hope comes out of this meeting, that you're down here. We've had a chance to hear from the Attorney General's office. We have also a chance to help write, or at least have input into the alternative bill that's going to be written this next week. We have also with us an attorney who I think has quite a lot of information, Frank Flavin. We may want to hear from him. We certainly hope, Frank, you'll sit in the meetings with us and give us some alternative ideas as to what might be written into a different type of a bill. But I think you've got to keep in mind, definitely in mind, that we've got a chance to modify this legislation. And that's the reason your position is so important. You've got to come up with something. Now, we may not be able to come up with it tomorrow. Likely not. But we've got to come up with something. It has been suggested at a couple of the meetings that we can't take a position. Well, of course, we can't if it's going to be too quick. But we've got to take a position, because if silence is consent. If we remain silent, the legislature's going to write the bill. The UFA might as well not be in existence. Now, you've got a chance to write legislation. And it's every bit as responsible a position as far as being a fisherman is concerned and fisheries legislation as it is if you were a senator or a legislator up here in Juneau, writing the laws of the land. Because you've got a chance to write those laws. And it's laws that concern you. And what we come out with has got to be something fishermen can live with. And it's also, hopefully, going to be something that will accomplish part of the task as far as improving the fishery is concerned. I really want everybody to take this thing serious and try to think of the alternatives. And we're going to try to present the alternatives to you so you can make a choice. Now, you may not be able to make it, but we've got to make it in the near future. Because for one thing, in my position is trying to speak for you. If I go into committee up there and you're under questioning, you've got to be able to answer those questions. You can't continue to say, of course, that, well, we haven't determined it. Now, we can get by with that for a little while. But I hope tomorrow that we can offer some of these alternatives and get you to at least think about what those alternatives are. And if you are empowered to vote for your group, be sure and vote on it. Because if we can come out of this meeting, not only with perhaps support of some form of limited entries, which seems to be the consensus, but if we can also break it down and say, well, we would prefer to see this approach to that approach. We don't have to specify to the detail, but we're going to have to make some choices. And they're not going to be easy choices. And this is one of the things that can kill us off as an organization, or as far as effectiveness is concerned. If we run into an impasse where in the long term we can't make those kinds of choices, then of course we're not going to be in a position to influence the legislation. Now, I think it's a real responsibility, and it causes me some concern, because I'm supposedly standing here as representing some people in Cook Inlet, and you want to represent their best interest.
Thank you, Bill. Speaking for Peterborough vessel owners, we are comprised mainly of seiners and halibut boats. We do have a couple of gillnetters in, although they are reluctant to join. I feel that we more or less carry the ball game down there and we're trying to get gillnet areas closed. I don't know why, but anyway, we hashed out this limited entry bill, and there was very much apprehension about the commission. It seemed to be an awful lot of questions answered into it. One guy described it by saying that there was enough mud between the lines to swim in, and we do believe in limited entry. I mean, we're all professional fishermen there, especially in the organization I represent. We want limited entry because we know we're not going to be cut. But we did more or less come to an agreement that what we want to see eliminated, if there's going to be people eliminated, would be the person that would have almost no economic impact upon it. That they were eliminated from the fishery. They felt that to eliminate a man who, say, was in the 20% range of his income from fishing, they would feel that this would, you know, create quite a hardship. But when I say, now this is, it's a kind of a question, a lot of the guys want everybody out that's making money other than fishing. So we don't really have any clear-cut recommendation other than we do want to see some form of limited entry. There's another fellow here from Petersburg, John, and this is more or less what I discussed with the guys before I came up here. We didn't get into any formal meeting and come up with any recommendation as pertaining to the limited entry bill. Maybe John would like to talk a little bit about it.
I'm just up here at the last moment. I got a call in the middle of the night. We better get up there. Freddie gave it to vessel owners and had several men at the meeting when Phil was down there and contributed into this. And he felt we should have someone up here for the information in it. I go on with what Fred said, that these men that were at the meeting, they're 100% professional fishermen. That's all they do. And on the boat harbor where the clubs and things get going, they all agree that something has to be done. If I could vote, I'd vote for it 100%. Another thing I like to say on the amount of money that you're going to put into an organization, the last thing a fisherman thinks like he wants to do is spend a buck on his business. And I can see things right here where you're going to save much more than this $20 that these 25 men are going to cough up with. if I can keep the jets, even scare them a little bit on the high seas with my taking me around through some of the action of this thing, $20 is nothing. And I think this is something that has to be brought up to all of your organizations, that the day of getting some for nothing is over. It takes money to operate, and 500 is even a heck of a lot. But it's our feeling in the area that I come from, the guys that are not represented by Fred, by Frenchie, that some of them have some apprehension, but the majority of them realize something has to be done. So, I wish us all luck.
Well, I belong to United Moonlighters here, and I just wonder if that could be a good you have something to say?
Well, he's got gut name on there.
Some form. And we've heard a pretty diverse opinion on limited entry tonight, how it should be, how the bill should be drafted and how it should be implemented into the fishery. So maybe on that note, we can go home tonight, think about it a little bit, look at your agenda, see what type of business you would like to have on the agenda. It can be added on. It's just a tentative agenda. There are probably items on you'd like to discuss that aren't on the agenda. We can amend it in the morning. And we can come back tomorrow at 9 was pretty early this morning. There wasn't many guys around. Maybe we should come back at 10 in the morning and get on with our business so we can...
We're probably back to the same position you always find yourself in. We all agree that we need a limited entry bill, but what are the mechanics of it? This bill seems to be rather vague in its present form. It doesn't provide for how do children of fishermen get into the area where there can be fishermen in the true sense of the word, in other words, owning your own boat and equipment. It doesn't provide for the boat puller to become a boat owner. And maybe to begin with, you probably wouldn't really want this to start with, but in the future, these are the people you really want to move ahead. And these are some of our thoughts on it. We don't have a position on the limited entry. We have lots of ideas on it. We wonder about the constitutionality of it from the standpoint that the bill itself still maintains the restriction on several rights of fisheries. Now, if you make a limited entry, if the amendment provides for limited entry in aquaculture, well, when you provide for these two things, is there anything left that you ban from a exclusive right of fishery? These are just thoughts. They're not research or anything else. But we kind of wonder if the original language still doesn't kind of negate the amendment. And these questions undoubtedly would have to be researched by an attorney if you really wanted to get into them. And it couldn't be the attorneys that are presently, well, the governor's attorneys undoubtedly believe what they're doing, so they won't give you, they'll give you an answer that, sure, it's legal. But I mean, if you really want to get into it, you have to check with other lawyers. Then on down the line, on limited entry, we again wonder, in the makeup of the three-man committee, why do you have to have an attorney on it? And because number one, the Attorney General's office is the legal representative. If you go to court, it's going to be the Attorney General that's going to defend it, not the
That's the attorney that's sitting on the commission. And why have an attorney on a commission that's going to deal with exclusively with commercial fisheries? There's very few attorneys in this state that know very much about commercial fisheries, and what they do know is generally of the legal, how to get a quick robber out of jail and so forth. There's not very many of them that can sit down and help you regulate correctly. So in my own opinion, I don't think you ought to have an attorney on the commission. It should be all commercial fishermen. I don't think you need a biologist. So this is a social economic problem. It's not a biological one. It's not a legal one. The legality comes in only when somebody takes the law to court, and there again, I suggest that the Attorney General is going to have to defend it, not the guy that they select to be on the commission. And with that, I think I'd like to answer questions, if there's any questions.
Dick?
Yeah?
When I come to this Federal State Land Use Commission, what is it presently comprised of now? I mean, the membership in this commission.
Rather brushed over this apprenticeship program, which I thought a great deal on myself, and your sentiment seemed to reflect my own about getting some youth into this thing and getting some form of apprenticeship going on. Do you really envision, after reading this bill over, and whether it's actually going to be more of just a stabilizing thing possibly in the future, or you think it will really change anything? I know yourself, you're a professional fisherman, have been for years. And you think the concept of professionalism will ever really be worked into this limited gear entry bill as we see it here on the table? Or do you think it's just going to resort back to a situation where maybe after 5 years we're really right exactly where we are? Maybe numerically speaking, we have the same amount of boats that we have, but the cadre of the professional end of the fishery hasn't really changed at all in a great many of these areas. Do you envision this or not? Well, if they can truly get a real limited entry bill that will stand up to both the state and federal constitutions, I would think that they could put together one that will keep only the professional fishermen in the business. And in doing so, I think the bill should be extended to include shellfish. I think the time that a person, fisherman spends both fishing salmon and shellfish should give him a better opportunity to become a license holder under a limited entry deal, because these are truly a full-time fisherman. And the only thing I was looking at, if you put in of course each area has to be handled a little differently because of the economics and the proximity. Most of the fishermen there are generally pretty well classified as kind of vacation type fishermen because they can't afford to live on what they make. Even though if they tried to, they'd be on welfare.
Well, it's obvious that the economics of something that the type of crab fishing, possibly even saving their touch, that it lends itself more towards professionalism. We know that we have a great many areas in the state, and particularly in salmon fishing, I think your Copper River sites are an example of this, where the capital outlay is such that it isn't most anyone can get into it and probably do it somewhat profitably, at least a part-time basis. And, I just kind of can envision a time in the future where, of course, we in the salmon fishery, and my second owner, we've always wanted this professionalism ethic. We think it's healthy for the fishery and for the resource, the marketing aspect of it, and the whole bit, and we strive towards this professionalism. But I can certainly see a time coming here in the future where, by you possibly may stabilize the fleet, but if it's going to be a negotiable item, this licensing thing, which is what they want in the bill, that you literally just end up with a great many people that can raise that amount of money and they're into it. It really doesn't matter. There doesn't seem to be much guidelines once you get one of these solid licenses, so to speak, whether you want to fish 1 month out of the year or during your vacation or what. It doesn't seem to be hardly any guidelines to me as far as towards lending itself towards professionalism once you're in, you know, and I can see just through the economic aspects of it, it becoming exactly what it is today, only just at a later time in the future.
One of the benefits that couldn't be achieved if you, say for instance, if all you could do is limit it to the present fishermen, at least to keep people from coming in new into the area. This is a problem like in our area there. If they put the pipeline into Maldives, which as a fisherman I hope they don't, but if they do, it's going to have a population explosion, and then as soon as the work declines on the pipeline, what are those people going to do? Well, the only thing they can do is go to fisheries, you know. So the fishermen in Prince William Sound are going to get a twofold attack. They're going to have to put up with the pollution, and then they're going to have to envision a larger fishing fleet when the workers in the pipeline get through. Well, they have to go for the jobs that they can get.
Yeah. The way I personally myself look at the governor's bill, if it isn't expanded to include all fishing in Alaska, you're going to put an undue burden upon other types of resource harvest. Now, it was brought out yesterday about halibut. If all of a sudden in southeastern Alaska or any area, you put a freeze and eliminate people from the salmonette fishery, their only alternative is to go into a fishery which is not included under this limited entry program. And I guarantee you they will do it.
Yeah. Well, the same thing as they leave crab out.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it has to be all of them.
Especially say that in the Kodiak area where you have a large crab fishery, and they freeze them out of the salmon, they're going to go into the crab. So they got to do something.
Didn't someone say, or have I heard, I'm not sure, that since the halibut is international, at this time we couldn't unilaterally limit the entry in the halibut. I don't know if anyone looked into that. And then I was thinking, you see, if we have if the final bill were to have a program where the guy who's not given a permit, you see, is bought out, you know, the state could have a fund to buy his boat and everything else, then he would have the option. He might rather sell out than try and get into something to fish for.
Well, I'd assume that the halibut is under the control of an international commission, and that the only people you can control is your own citizens. Although you do sell the licenses, but yet the Canadians fish the halibut outside the 3-mile limit. Well, this is another thought when you brought that up. Presently, the jurisdiction of the state of Alaska only extends out to the 3-mile limit. Coast Guard uses a phony method of measuring so that we go amble along the coastline all the way. We don't have a straight baseline concept. If we could get that, we'd be much better off. If we could get the straight baseline concept, we'd have more territorial sea. Secondly, I think we ought to work on getting a deal where the federal government automatically applies the regulations set up by the state to the contiguous zone from the 3-mile to the 12-mile limit. Because if you put gear restrictions in the 3-mile limit, well, then when you get outside the safer craft, when you get outside of the 3-mile limit into the contiguous zone, it's controlled now by the federal government and they don't have any restrictions, so that you can fish any amount of gear out there and do it legally. And the state has attempted to control this through a landing law, but it'd be a heck of a lot better if the federal government would automatically adopt the regulations controlling the fisheries within the 3-mile limit, so that we'll have actually 12-mile limits to control as a state.
Yeah. Thank you for your comments.
In his sight, without intent. Attempting to prevent it, short of using force or without reporting it. All right, now number three, person to guide or
outfit.
A
person to outfit or guide is defined as chapter without being licensed.
Yeah, but he's got something as an outfit.
All you need to do is add an outfitter.
A person to guide or engage hunts as an outfitter. Defined in this chapter without being licensed. Maybe you can read that.
Essentially, all we're doing is adding outfitter,
yeah,
I think.
I don't know what he means.
Or engage hunts as
we should do that.
A person to guide or engage hunts as an outfitter.
Once again, it's just a matter of language.
Yeah, it's just language in
there.
Language. Yeah.
Strikes me small. Number four, yeah. Down number four, outfitter in
right.
License master. Okay, now down to the injunctions against unlawful action on the next page. 1648-20. No changes in that. General definitions down here. Now let's see.
You want to add outfitter?
Licensed outfitter means a licensed outfitter as provided for in section blank of this act.
Right.
The contracts with client for hunts, or who contracts with clients for hunts and employs guides, furnishes camps, hunting equipment, and supplies. However, this does not include the operation of
the retail,
sales business. And that's directly slanted the booking agents.
Well, it's a sporting goods store.
Yeah, but booking agents too. Well, not necessarily.
No, retail sales would be a sporting goods store.
Yeah. Because some of them call themselves outfitters down here.
Oh, I see, sure.
That's what it was, sure. So that would be just the definition of outfitter. Who contracts with the client for the hunt, employs guides, furnishes camps, hunting equipment, and supplies. However, this does not include the operation of a retail sales business. Doesn't have to be in there, either. Down at the bottom, section 6, AS 6015 is repealed. Section 7,
these will
section a person licensed registered guy maybe take effect shall on application be issued an outfitter's license.
Right. Add outfitter there. Some of the stuff now.
Operation license. Yeah.
Now some of these other things we'll have to check on. Oh, like AS 1650 is repealed now.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it is. We'll have to check. And then I'm assuming that you want to take act after the day after passage.
Well, now in the governor's bill, there was something
in there.
I'll go to this one over too. What the hell bill is this now?
Well, it really wouldn't make much difference when it took effect because all it would require would be a $10 outfitter license for every guide that was.
Okay, this says all guiding regulations in effect on the effective date of this chapter and all regulations adopted by the Board of the Fish and Game before the effective date of this chapter, so far as they are not in conflict with this chapter, remain valid until amended or repealed in the Guide Licensing Board.
Okay.
That isn't it either. That's what I was
It should be right at the end of the.
It is, but I didn't copy that page, but I got the original here. Ha 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 ha. Because there was only two sentences on it. I thought, well, I don't need to copy that at 15 cents a crack. The act takes effect July 1st, 1973. That would
right
give
in the middle, which is after the bear season and before fall
right.
season.
That would give a chance to get things going.
Yeah.
July 1st, 1973.
Yeah, because after the act, why?
Right.
There's got to be some time there, time element there,
right.
When they're hunting.
Okay, now.